Welcome to the Full Tracy Money audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:04 p.m. and that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is June 14th. Well, the ECB had their meeting today. They did not raise interest rates. That is to be expected. They also decided that they are going to complete their quantitative easing program back in September. They'll be buying 15 billion every month between now and then. Well, the market voted pretty emphatically against the euro. 2 full cents on the downside, clear downward dynamic. Well, if that doesn't signal that, I think the definition of a dynamic in the market is that it makes you sit up and pay attention and ask the question, golly, what happened on that day? Well, we know what happened on that day. It was that the Europeans do not want to have a strong currency, that they put up with having a very firm euro for a number of years, and now it is the USA's turn to take some of the pressure. This is an emphatic signal that there is supply dominance coming in from the region of the trend mean. It didn't even quite get to the region of the trend mean. And now a sustained move above this week's high would be required to question potential for additional downside. It does look like the euro is going to move lower from here. Well, we also, I think there is a very good graphic that I saw earlier on today, which gives us a pretty good representation of exactly where we are in terms of global monetary policy. The Bank of Japan is running the loosest monetary policy in the world. The Federal Reserve is running the tightest. The Bank of Canada and the Bank of England are on the upswing. The global average is still neutral, but the Australians are coming to the end of a dovish period. China is still out there in the dovish horizon, and so is Switzerland. But China is tightening on the shadow banking sector, and this may not be really showing up in terms of monetary policy. They are also allowing defaults. Well, this is something that's important because when we look at the well-developed or mature corporate bond sectors of Europe and the USA and North America, or let's just call it the OECD, well, then what we have is enough data and enough experience of both bull and bear markets to ascertain what is a normal, inverted commas, normal level for the default rate. We simply don't have that information for China. And that's a problem because the default rate now is already in 2018 as high as it was for all of 2016. And it's likely to move higher again from here. They are leaning on the shadow banking sector. That means that it's cutting off funding for highly leveraged businesses. That what are, I think, rather colloquially called in China hedge fund strategies, are effectively private lending organizations that were making extremely risky bets on the basis that no one ever defaulted or was allowed to default, that it would always be backed up by the government. And that's just no longer true. And that is resulting in some unwinding. And I think that that's a good part of the reason why we have this underperformance in just about all of the major Chinese stock market indices. The A-share index was just ba is barely steady in the region of the lower side of this range for the year. But there is a clear downward bias, and it really does need some very clear upper dynamics, and more particularly a break in the progression of lower rally highs to confirm a return to demand dominance. The banking sector is also leading on the downside here. And yes, it was in mildly positive territory in here today, but this is still really quite a well-defined downward trend. Well, there are a significant number of the mainland banks have maintained listings in Hong Kong, and the H-share index is now back below 12,000. It's right in the region of the trend mean. It's at the lower side of this range. Well, it's been ranging in this manner now for a good few months already, and every time it's got back down below 12,000, it's been able to rally back above it. So this is going to be a key level where demand is going to have to demonstrate that it can return to dominance, and so far it's not looking especially bullish. Certainly we don't have any evidence just yet of a breakdown, but when you have all of these mainland indices that are leading on the downside, then it is questionable just how well the Hong Kong listed Chinese companies are going to be able to continue to hold out. Then you have Alibaba, which is representative of the technology sector. But of course, the problem for China's markets is that just about all of the significant Chinese technology companies are listed overseas. And that is perhaps the one bullish story that we could make for China. It's that they're going to be starting a CDR market that will allow mainland investors to buy some of these technology shares. But if they want to free up cash, what are they going to be selling? Well, they're going to be selling some of the other big shares, and most particularly the banks. So there is something of a double whammy for the financial sector in particular, and indeed the property sector, if mainland investors get I think an additional avenue for investing in another sector. If we get increasing numbers of those large technology companies opening listings in the mainland, then that is going to represent one of the best opportunities for mainland investors to transition or rotate out of legacy state-owned companies into new technology companies. They haven't really had that opportunity, and I suspect that they're probably going to jump at it with both feet. Well, if we go back and think about that very big downward dynamic on the euro, then generally speaking, we have an inverse correlation between European equities and the euro. So the euro stocks was up in a dynamic manner in here today. And I think one of the more important points is that it has been really quite inert, that over the course of the last year and counting, it has been trading in a band between approximately 360 and 400. So let's call it approximately a 10% range. Well, I think the most important point about the euro stocks is that it has been ranging below this 400 point now for a fairly significant amount of time, and that in the event that we do have additional euro weakness, then the most likely scenario is that this index is going to break on the upside and push back up towards the highs posted back in 2000 and in 2008. If we look at the broader index of the Europe stocks 600, that's including the UK, Sweden, Denmark, Switzerland, and Norway, so the non-Eurozone European countries, well, it's been consolidating below the 400 level now for the better part of 2.5 years, and 400 has represented an area of resistance on three separate occasions before that. Well, one would have to conclude that if it can sustain a move above 400, then we are in a new bull market environment. And of course, that's at least in nominal terms. Well, the FTSE 100 gives us a reasonable example of what we. Whoops, I haven't typed that particularly effectively. But I th oh, well, I, it actually has given me what I wanted. It's the this is a 30-year chart. It shows that the FTSE ranged below 7,000 for a pretty significant period of time, and then it broke out. And now it is coming back up towards the upper side of that range, and it has been reasonably steady as it consolidates in the region of the upper side of that range. Now, what I find particularly interesting, and I was chatting with David today, and he asked me to pass on his regards to all of our subscribers. Well, what we both agreed upon was that this is a medium-term correction, but that it is looking increasingly likely that when we define a medium-term correction, we talk about it as being anything from 6 to 18 months in duration, and that the most likely scenario is that this is going to be on the shorter end of that metric, where we see that European indices are firming, that the Nasdaq 100 is extending its breakout to new high ground. So I think we can only conclude that as long as it is holding that move above 7,000, that the bull market has been reasserted. Apple, which is still the largest share in the world, is in the region of its peak. Amazon is pushing on to new high ground. Netflix has been on a tear. This is a company that really is one of the darlings of the investment community right now. Now it is racing towards this $400 level, and the moving average is at 272, so it's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that we might get some pause of consolidation. But as long as it's holding the progression of higher reaction lows, I don't think anyone's going to be particularly worried about it. Then Google, which did lose uptrend consistency, is also reasonably firm here and is coming back to challenge the progression of lower rally highs since the peak in February. So even shares that have been lagging are still pushing on to new high ground. Then if we look at the Russell 2000, it has also extended its breakout. So and there is I think an argument that we have continued strength in the mid-cap shares. The Mittelstand in Germany, the MDAX, are pushing on to test the upper side of their range that's been going on now since November of last year. In the UK, the mid-caps have been leading on the upside and pushed on to new high ground. So there is certainly a rather bullish environment going on within the stock market generally. Now, what is happening in China is obviously of concern. If we were to think about anything that is a potential concern, think about all the things that are historically lead indicators for future recessions. Well, oil prices might be steady, but they're not surging higher. And but they are trending higher. So I think that's one important point. Then if we look at the high yield spreads, well, high yield spreads in the USA have been absolutely static. They are heading higher in Europe. So when the ECB says that they think everything is A-OK with the stock, with the economy, that's against the background where the economic surprise indicator is at negative 100. So there's a serious surprise in the downside. German industrial production is coming in below expectations. Then, of course, you have the continued political turmoil. Well, what that suggests is that the ECB does not want to continue to support the bond markets, and they want to see some of the yields starting to move higher. If we look at, for example, the 2-year yield in Germany, it's still yielding negative 62 basis points, and this is really rather just a completely extraordinary set of circumstances. And when we go back, I suspect that when we look back on this in a decade's time, then it's going to be rather difficult to explain. But the 2-year yield was actually down in here today. That's despite the fact that the ECB said they're going to be stopping purchases within 3 months. And what that also tends to suggest is that the outlook for Germany's economy is under question. Not so much because of anything that the ECB is doing, but perhaps because of what's going on in China. That, I think, is one of the points that seems to be somewhat underappreciated by markets. If we're going to worry about one thing, it's got to be the underperformance of China. That this is meaningful, that when banks start to trend lower like that, then that is something that we cannot simply ignore. We have to sit up and pay attention. That when we think about what's going on in the wider market, that generally speaking, in the developed markets are outperforming right now and breaking on the upside, and emerging markets are taking it on the chin because of the strength of the US dollar. The Turkish lira as well was in weaker territory again in here today. Now, this is a new closing low for the currency. That's following intervention to support it, and now the big question is, what else is the central bank going to do to support the currency? If we look at the perhaps I'm certainly not I'm not coherent right now. I'm trying to remember what the ticker is for the Turkish ETF in the UK. Well, it was right at the lower side of its range, and it was looking like it was firming, but today it's breaking. Well, this week it has broken downwards. So And this now is a resumption of the downtrend, and it, at the very minimum, it needs to sustain a move back above 1500p. That's, I think, a rather significant development. Now, when we think about what the risks are, there are risks in China and there are risks in some of the emerging markets where you have a clear deterioration in the fiscal sustainability of these respective economies in Turkey, in Argentina, in Venezuela, in Brazil. That's and then you also have the prospect of a leftist populist administration taking power in Mexico, and the Mexican peso is now breaking down again. Well, that's all going to put pressure on these currencies. Now, the dollar isn't going to go up indefinitely. Eventually, it's going to stop going up. Then that is going to represent a very clear buying opportunity for some of these emerging markets. But for the moment, at least, it suggests that there is some risk outstanding in the emerging markets, and that is creating a bid for the dollar, but also a bid for Wall Street generally. And that relative strength, where you have the currency in your favor and the stock market in your favor, well, that's certainly one of the more bullish points right now for US dollar denominated assets. And against that background, gold prices are back above the $1,300 area, but they were not able to hold all of the advance in here today. Now, it continues to pause around the $1,300 area, and this represents the region of the trend mean, and there's still a progression of higher reaction lows off the low in late 2016, but we need a clear upward dynamic to confirm that demand is returning to dominance. Silver prices were also not quite able to hold all of their advance, but they are now back above 17. Now, one of the, I think, important points, I've certainly been looking at more point and figure charts recently. We can see very clearly on the candlestick chart that there is a progression of lower rally highs within the base. We can also look at that on a point and figure chart, and we're going to get a pretty similar story. But the progression of lower rally highs within the base, I think, is very clear. And I'm going to just drag this chart over. So we can see that there is a progression of lower rally highs over the course of the last few years, and it really does need to break that progression of lower rally highs to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. If it can do that, well, we know that silver and the precious metals generally are historically volatile, and that would suggest then that when it breaks out, it's going to do so in a dynamic manner, and that it could potentially run and run in a very impressive manner for at least another few months after the breakout. But until we in fact get the breakout, and I'm not quite sure that $17 is yet enough to really confirm that we're in a demand-dominated environment beyond the short term. So it might be a little early to count our chickens just yet. What is quite interesting is that the gold miners have been particularly inert. And again, this is a very volatile sector generally, and the fact that they have been so inert is, I think, rather suspicious from my perspective, and that's why I continue to hold a long position, because I think that they're low enough that when the breakout comes, it's likely to be dynamic and it's likely to be on the upside. So there is potentially here an argument that while the US dollar is strong and that is acting as something of a headwind for performance for some of the for the gold price in US dollar terms, that other currencies being so weak, that gold is representing I think a safe haven bet for some of those investors. So therefore, gold is not appreciating in all currencies, but it's appreciating in most of them. And that might just be enough to get gold prices starting to move upwards again in a more consistent manner. Then if we look at the industrial resources, well, copper prices we're down by 5 cents in here today, and this is confirming at least near-term resistance in the region of the upper side of the range. So it really does need to break well above the $3.30 level on that COMEX contract to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. But the action over the last 2 weeks is clearly different. That it was a very emphatic rally to break the downward bias for most of the year so far. And it was perhaps due some consolidation, and we are getting it. But as long as it is holding that $3 area, we can give the benefit of the doubt to additional higher to lateral ranging. And when we think about all of these things in terms of the bigger picture, well, technology continues to lead, and we're continuing to see that resources are tending to trend higher, albeit in a jerky manner. And that's representative of cyclicals tending to do better in the latter stages of a bull market. This expansion has been going on for 9 years, so eventually we are going to have a recession. Secular bull markets tend to be punctuated by recessions from time to time, and those represent really attractive buying opportunities. But there's no evidence of a recession right now. And I think that with an increasing number of markets that are breaking on the upside, that this is a time to be a little bit more risk tolerant than has really been at any time since the beginning of the year. So I think that's one of the biggest conclusions from the number of markets that are breaking on the upside. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.